This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shahad Kutin, and with me, Kusu Chuang. You're listening to Pressing Matters, a show that goes behind the headlines to get to the story. Our guest today is P. Gunasegaram, an independent business analyst. The first story we're going to be looking at this morning is an article, Gunnar, that you penned, published on Malaysia Kini, titled Kleptocracy Premium for the Ringgit? And of course, you begin with the assertion that despite the relative robust nature of the Malaysian economy and some of the numbers that we're seeing, the Malaysian ringgit continues to be around its lowest levels relative to the US dollar. Question is, why?
Yep. I think if you look at it, 2009, it was 3 ringgit to 1 US dollar. You know? And then since then, it went down to as low as 4.5. That's a very sharp depreciation. And a lot of the depreciation took place in the last 2 years, from 2015 to 2017, when it fell by around 30% to the US dollar. And this was the second worst performing currency among the ASEAN five. The original ASEAN five, which is Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, Singapore, Malaysia. So the only other, the worst performer was Indonesia. So it has been really doing badly, but the economy has not been doing that badly. And in fact, the second quarter growth is very respectable at 5.8%. So why is it that the ringgit, you know, just refuses to come up again? Although Bank Negara has taken a lot of action, in terms of closing off the NDF, the non-deliverable forwards market.
Well, I think the question really is, given what the regulators and the central bank know about where the ringgit is, why, and whether or not they have allowed these things to happen. Because, you know, don't forget that at the end of the day, Malaysia is an external-focused, globalized economy, and it has, you know, done quite a good job of diversifying away from its oil base. So I just want to sound out some, you know, some observations by fund managers in the past. Something like 60% of Malaysia's economy is export-based, and a lot of it is manufacturing-related, electronics-related. So a weak ringgit will serve the country in good stead, don't you think?
Yes, actually, the one of the beneficiaries of a weak ringgit will be the export sector. So the amount of money that you earn in ringgit terms will be a lot higher for the same amount of exports, assuming that the exports are not terribly responsive to some changes, that you still get the same amount of prices in US dollars. So what will happen then is that for the same amount of goods exported, you get more ringgit, you know, because the ringgit has depreciated against the US dollar.
Yeah, so this might be one of the unintended consequences of a weakening.
Or rather intended. Maybe, well, they do know where the ringgit is relative to historical.
So you're saying this is a matter of policy.
Maybe.
But what about but before we get, Gunnar, to chime in on that, the question of that you said, you know, about Malaysia diversifying from its oil-producing base. Now, that is sometimes used as an explanation for the weak ringgit, isn't it, Gunnar? That, in fact, with the fall in crude prices, that many countries that are oil exporters, their currencies track the price of crude.
Okay, the although Malaysia is a net exporter of oil, you know, I mean, we use, or it would be more accurate to say energy, you know. So if it's a net exporter of energy, the dependence on oil has actually declined very considerably for the overall economy, and I think it is now definitely less than 20% of the total economy. It used to be more than 30% before. So I don't think that is the only reason for the decline in the ringgit. But I'm not sure whether the ringgit is being artificially pressed down. I really don't think so, because I think at these levels, the ringgit is actually lower than the fixed exchange rate of 3.8. No? So it went to as low as 4.5. It is around 4.2 now. So it is rather weak, and I don't think in the long term it serves Malaysia's purpose to have the ringgit that weak. All right, the export sector will improve, you know? So that's a short-term game. But if you do not have this wealth spreading on to other people, then you have a problem, you know? Because the benefit of the lower ringgit is not being reflected, is not being felt by a greater number of people.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, a lot of us would have lamented, and especially those of us with long enough memories will know where the ringgit was versus the dollar, versus the Sing dollar. I mean, you know, even in the 70s, I went traveling to Singapore, and they, you know, heaven forbid, they actually accepted Malaysian ringgit in those days. It was on a one-to-one basis.
Yes, until the 70s. Until the 70s, it was...
It was parity.
It was fixed rate. And then I think... If you look at the numbers, even in 1980, I mean, okay, we think 1980 is recent, but it's actually 37 years ago. In 1980, the ringgit and Singapore dollar were almost on par, not to the US dollar.
But, you know, isn't it also true that in sort of maintaining or protecting our pride in terms of having a one-to-one exchange rate Sing dollar, that we actually spent a lot of money defending the ringgit? I mean, didn't we spend billions defending the ringgit? Is that a good way to go?
I'm not sure whether we spent a lot of money defending the ringgit. Bank Negara's official position is that they intervene in the market to smoothen out excessive fluctuations of the ringgit. They don't actually try and control the level of the ringgit. So, but it's the thing is, from 1980 to now, there's been a huge divergence between the value of the ringgit and the value of the Sing dollar. Sing dollar and ringgit were on par in 1980, almost on par. And now the Sing dollar is worth three times that of the ringgit. So what have we been doing wrong and what has Singapore been doing right?
Well, I know a friend who went to Singapore last week and he's paid, you know, 450 Sing dollars for an Italian meal with eight other people with one bottle of wine, which in ringgit terms is 1,400 ringgit, and he came back crying with a box of tissues. But, of course, that's a story for another day, Sherrod.
Unfortunately, for some of us who have relatives in Singapore, that, you know, one becomes the poor relative from Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, but jokes aside, it is quite a... you know, quite a negative phenomenon that we find ourselves in. So, back in the day, and this is that long ago, Gunnar, when Zeti was still in charge, and she kind of mentioned that the fair value for the ringgit was around about 380, 385, 390. And in those days, it was around about 435, 440. So, where should the ringgit really fairly be in between, you know, what she perceived to be fair value and where the ringgit is now?
I think in the long term, your value of the ringgit is going to be the kind of, will reflect the kind of economic policies that you have, the stability of your economy, your inflation rate, those kind of things. You know? So it's pretty difficult to put a fair value on the ringgit. I mean, in 2009, it was three ringgit to one US dollar.
I mean, and coming back to the title of your piece, you know, and the elephant in the room, as it were, kleptocracy, because we had a big rally, you know, sponsored by the Pakatan Harapan over the weekend, an anti-kleptocracy rally. And kleptocracy is really now just kind of entered into the lexicon of Malaysians. Maybe it's also a very political frame on the troubles of the country. But is there a kleptocracy premium, and I put this in quotes, when it comes to the value of the ringgit?
Certainly, what has happened at 1MDB and the disappearing money will have an impact on the value of the ringgit. So if this can happen these days, that state money, somebody has actually dipped their hands into state money, and as much as 40 billion could have just disappeared into thin air, so to speak, although it's turning up as assets in the US, you know, now. So the question on everyone's minds is, if this can happen now, what more will happen in future? See? And then we can actually talk about all the other events which are taking place in conjunction with 1MDB, you know, later, as far as this is concerned. But if you look at how the ASEAN 5 has been doing, Sing dollar has strengthened more than 100% against the US dollar, you know, over 37 years. The ringgit, however, has weakened. So one US dollar gets less than half the Sing dollars it got got in 1980. So that's an appreciation of more than 50%. You know, but the US dollar now gets 50% more ringgit. You know, so that's a depreciation of the ringgit. 36 times more Indonesian rupiah, astounding. 8 times more Philippine peso and 70% more Thai baht. You know? So the only country which has actually done well against the US dollar over this 37-year period and significantly well is Singapore.
I've got your chart in front of me. It's not just the ringgit, the rupiah, the Indonesian rupiah has dropped by considerable amount. So is the Thai baht, so is the Philippine peso. So in terms of fiscal management, maybe the Singaporeans have done much, much better. Well, obviously, much, much better than any of these four other ASEAN 5 countries.
It will not be just fiscal management as well. It's an overall development. You know, Singapore is now well entrenched as a developed country. You know? So it's infrastructure, it's education, it's opportunities, it's skill levels, and so on. It's the whole gamut of things. You know? So that is why its currency is strong and is still doing well. You know?
I do want to ask, though, you know, you talk about kleptocracy and the scandals around the brand Malaysia, as it were. But to the extent that the ringgit is, you know, the value of the ringgit is based on the demand for it, right, from foreign investors and such. I mean, aren't they notoriously agnostic? I mean, do they really care? I mean, it seems like the 1MDB thing, despite the ongoing, you know, trials in various jurisdictions, that is largely contained. I mean, do you think that foreign investors, whether they're looking at our stock market or they're looking at setting up businesses, really care about this, what is a political hot potato for the government, but largely unimportant to investors?
I think they care about risk. You know? So investors always are very, very careful about risk. You know? So if I'm going to invest in a Malaysian asset now, you know, and the value of the ringgit depreciates, so what happens to my asset? You know, the amount of returns that I get in Malaysian ringgit terms is negated by the amount of depreciation against the US dollar. When I invest, I put a risk premium on the ringgit before I invested.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't help but recall the comments by Suresh Ramanathan. We've had him a number of times, the currency strategist, a number of times over the last few times when he's basically correctly observed that where the ringgit was 30 years ago versus where the ringgit is now is, you know, but for a little few durations in between, it's the wrong direction. Is it gone from 2.5 to what is this now, 4.2, 4.3? And the only way is the same direction, which is south.
Okay, our guest today on Pressing Matters, P. Gunasegaram, an independent business analyst. I'm Sharad with Kusu Chuang. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Sharad with Chuang, and our guest this morning on Pressing Matters is P. Gunasegaram, an independent business analyst. And we were talking about your article in Malaysia Kini, a kleptocracy premium for the ringgit, question mark. And so the question now before us, 1MDB, those major investments in from China that are also leading to some sort of debt burden.
There is a fear that because of this hole in 1MDB that there will be compromises made as far as economic policy making is concerned. So there is evidence of this. One was the sale of 1MDB's energy assets to a China company, for instance. And this may have been done with a price which was perhaps on the low side, you know. At least, when you compare it with the acquisition price the price that 1MDB paid when they acquired these assets. Now, the other thing is things like the East Coast Rail Link. You know, this is a $55 billion ringgit project, and the viability is totally in question. And the cost could eventually rise to as much as 100 billion ringgit for these kind of things, you know. So, and you have a delayed payment system. There is no payment to China for 7 years. And then after that, the payment starts kicking in. If the project is not viable, then you are paying out money and you are not getting anything in. So it's a major problem. So these kind of future problems may actually increase the risk premium for the ringgit.
Yeah, you know, I just want to cite an email which I get confidentially from time to time, and this came from one of the, you know, foreign currency houses based in Singapore. I'm not going to cite the name because this came to me in confidence. But they paid a visit to Malaysia some recent weeks ago, and they met the central bank, they met some policy analysts, and they discussed how, and they quite rightly pointed out that the ringgit is the cheapest emerging market currency in this part of the world, other than the Japanese yen. And Japanese yen is, of course, not in the same kind of like profile. But they said that basically the policymakers said that there's not much of a risk in terms of a capital outflow because there's so many local market investment funds like the PNB and the EPF and Co-op and LTAT and even Tabung Haji, they can pick up a lot of the slack.
Yeah.
But that's not really the point, because the point is, if people are discouraged by the currency and the economy and what we're doing on a fiscal basis, then it's not so much of the liquidity being mopped up, it's what we're doing about it going forward. And what you're saying, Gunnar, 55 billion ringgit from the East Coast rail job, the EDRA assets being sold at a discount.
High speed rail.
Are we doing the right things for the economy? And clearly the answer, or rather the suggestion, is no.
So why is it that our numbers still appear good? I mean, the government's coming out and saying, look at the GDP numbers, look at these other indices that suggest that, in fact, we're recovering and we are going to be doing well. Is it a question of optimism? I mean, you say about the East Coast Rail, the seven-year period, that if things don't work out, then we're paying back for something that's not a viable concern. But what if things go right? I mean, is it really a question of optimism?
It's a question of whether things go right and what are the chances that things will go right in this case. Yeah? So you are talking about a very large investment which basically involves moving goods from Port Klang to Kuantan and then transshipping it to the other side and movement of goods on both ways. So you have to get a lot of traffic before this will become viable. So there is a big question mark as far as that is concerned, whether it can be made viable or not. And then you have all the port facilities which are going to be built as well, which the cost of which we have not talked about yet. They are talking about 200 billion worth of port facilities in Port Klang, further expansion in Kuantan Port and things like that. So it's a very, very large, very high-risk project that you're talking about. So the problems will not become evident until 10 years down the line, So the smart investor will already be taking these things into account.
Do you guys think that the elections, whether called in November or by March next year, they'll have much of a standing on the ringgit? In terms of where Najib's position is, in terms of whether he's re-elected, and of course there is always a
Is the ringgit sensitive to that kind of?
It should be, right.
It will be the there will be the short term and the long term impact. Okay, so if say for instance, if there is a change of government, there may even be a short-term fall in the currency. There might be, because there is a period of short-term uncertainty. Okay. So whenever there's uncertainty, your risk premium will increase. But in the long term, people may decide to call it differently. It all depends. It's pretty difficult to predict the level of the ringgit. But the currency weakness is always a symptom of a larger disease. A country which is doing well economically, you have got the right policies in place, you want to increase the competitiveness of your industries, you want to increase the level of education, and you're doing something about it. All this will be reflected eventually in a stronger currency. But if your currency is weak, it is a negative vote on the country. Basically, people are not so optimistic that the country is going to do well in the future. So that is, I think that is what needs to be changed by actually active policy.
Gunnar, going back to what you're talking about, the ASEAN 5 and Singapore being the only improving currency against the dollar, I want to cite this very, in fact, this is what actually happened to me a couple of days ago, because, I took the kids to a maths tuition class, and, this particular outfit, they're based on the Singapore math system. And the guy that was doing the teaching there, he told me basically that the Singapore maths curriculum in the country is ranked number one in the world. And if you learn standard one maths in Singapore, you're capable of doing standard four maths in Malaysia. They're doing algebra in basically standard three to standard four, when it's actually a form one, form two subject in Malaysia. So, it's just one small microcosm of what Singapore is doing, which when you multiply it by a million times, is exemplified in the Sing dollar being where it is against the US dollar.
It's a very interesting proposition, and something maybe that might drive, I think, parents mad eventually, having to teach their 10-year-olds algebra or help them with their homework.
That's pretty difficult to say, but so the point is your education system has to be good. In Finland, for instance, which is supposed to have the best education system in the world right now, according to some, they increase the amount of play among the school children. Whatever it is, you need a proper policy in terms of improving your your education, you know, whichever steps you take.
And I guess it has to be seen as so as well. I mean, that the visibility is the one that will drive confidence up, right, rather than in the opposite direction. Mm. Well, fascinating discussion. If you have comments and your own take on where the ringgit is going, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or share your views on WhatsApp with us at 018-789-8899. That's the number to WhatsApp us. Thank you so much, Gunnar. It's always a pleasure to have you on Pressing Matters. And we're coming up to the news shortly, and then we'll be back with Enterprise. Stay tuned. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Kusu Chuang, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.